Talking.
Test, test. Can you hear me, YouTubers?
Well, they can't hear you.
Well, they should be able to because I'm broadcasting right now.
There you are. So you're delayed.
Oh, great. Awesome. So you might want to mute that over there. We are live on our end, but we have a latency so we can talk to you. I'm talking and typing at the same time. Okay. Welcome to the Psalmist Corner Podcast. This is our first live stream. It's not listed, so welcome to the VIP Club. And we're a VIP Club that doesn't get money from YouTube or have a special mug associated with it. So I guess if you're looking for people in this whole dispute, you can pick us, which we'll be honored for. But anyway, we're going to be talking about that, obviously. The Louder with Crowder Daily Wire stuff that went down over the week. Pretty sad day for conservatives. This is our first live stream, and honestly, I'm not, like, super prepared, so this is going to be totally on the fly. But I do have my show notes, and we'll just see if I survive this live stream as I go. I see some comments coming in here. Oh. D-Raid. He hears us. Awesome. I can ban you. I should just do that. But there's a delay, so I'm, like, laughing before you get the joke. That's kind of a weird time continuum issue right there. But anyway, we're going to be talking about the Louder with Crowder thing, Daily Wire stuff. A lot of people in our audience, even though it's not very big, have been asking what I think about it. So this is a good place to kind of say that. And then, you know, we can always talk offline about it too, especially if you don't agree with me. We'll also be talking about ChatGPT, how I think that's going to impact religion and how, regardless of your particular affinity for religion. And then we're going to talk about what we're reading. But before we jump in, just a couple of announcements. We are going to get the e-store up soon. We're going to launch with some things called the Intellectual Life Bundle. It's going to come with an Intellectual Life book. It's going to come with something like a moleskin journal. We're not sure exactly if we're going to get moleskin or not, but we're working on that. And then a custom pen made by yours truly. All these kind of YouTube channels have some sort of monetization that they have to have in order to make it worth the effort. So if you can be on the lookout for that, they aren't going to be cheap. I can tell you that because these pens, they're damn nice. Okay. I don't know if we have to censor that or not, but you know, anyway, we're learning this as we go. Okay, guys. So just have a little bit of there's Jim. Hey. So anyway, have a little bit of grace. Anyway. So also we are going to be lowering our digital footprint, not because of any political reasons, but because it's just me and my wife. So if you want to volunteer to manage one of our social media profiles, that'd be great, but we're not going to pay you, so it's probably not worth your time. So we're just going to be on Twitter. So we'll still have our pages up in case, you know, things get bigger and wilder and crazier. And you know, we need a kickback by 25% from YouTube. I'm just kidding. That was a low blow. Sensitive time. Not for us though. And so anyway, so just be aware. We're going to be on there. I have my lovely assistant, Jasmine. I'm just kidding. It's my wife, Lindsay. I just wanted to say that, freak people out. She's going to be monitoring the chat. So if you guys have any questions or comments that you think are particularly worth contributing, I'll read them out and we'll talk about them. So that's the thing. We're going to be on Twitter primarily. So follow us at Thomistic Dan or at Solomon's Corner. Is there anything I miss? Okay. And then we'll have updates on the book club and how that's going to go moving forward at the end of the show. So what is it? Oh, yeah, don't forget to sign up for the email. We at solomonscorner.com. And if you go on there and you see the store in the menu, you can sign up to be notified early of our e-store. We have some people that we're letting buy things early so that we can make sure we have all our I's dotted and our T's crossed. So if you want to be considered for an early access, make sure you go to solomonscorner.com, click on the menu, go to the store, and put your email on the store page. They're separate lists, so just be aware of that. Anyway, so time for a sip of coffee before I launch into this highly contentious thing about Daily Wire and Louder with Crowder. So for those that don't know what happened, Louder with Crowder decided that he was going to attack the Daily Wire, which was something that some of us all saw kind of possibly coming. I've been following these guys since before they even had premium subscriptions. But there's this infighting that's happening now because Louder with Crowder was given this term sheet, and it's very important, the definitions of words here, because he wasn't given a contract. He was given a term sheet. And a lot of the stuff that I'm telling you is just stuff that I've gleaned from the Daily Wire's responses and Steven Crowder's. And we're not going to go through all of these, but I do have some highlights that I want to play for you guys, because I think it's important for us to keep everything in perspective when you have 30-minute responses to an hour response and 15-minute responses, plus all the backstabbing that's happening. It's really kind of like a, what was that show called? Maury?
Maury?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, the Maury show?
Oh, yeah. Or Jerry Springer is also where you saw a lot of the backstabbing.
Jerry Springer. That's the show. It's like Jerry Springer for conservatives right now on YouTube. People saying, my follower count is like so much bigger than yours. Feels like you're compensating for something. But anyway, so the issue is that there's a lot of, it's a pretty sad thing, especially for those of us who were really inspired by both of these content creators. So in short, Loudworth Crowder basically decides to read this term sheet and show that if he had signed with said company, which he didn't release the names, then he would have been basically in a slave contract and he would have been fined. And basically it looks like when you watch his video that YouTube has its claws in Daily Wire. I even posted, I had my Loudworth Crowder mug. I posted on my Twitter, you know, standing with the Stop Big Con. Because I like both of these guys, and even if it was Daily Wire, I just assumed they were going to work it out. I didn't think it was going to get as ugly as Crowder made it. So full disclosure, I'm definitely team Daily Wire, but that doesn't mean I don't have any criticisms of the way that this all came about and how Daily Wire is responding and things like that. But at the end of the day, I still think they are showing that they are the classy conservatives and that they understand at a more practical level how to fight this fight. So, you know, don't let that turn you off. Everybody has their opinions. But before I launch into that, let me just kind of say a little bit about our experience here. Like, if you get into this business as a conservative, your friends will immediately start to kind of give you some inside ideas and things like that, which is great. That's a good thing. And then you find out that, like, all your options as far as technology and tools are largely very much in favor of the left. And so, like, you're risking getting canceled. So for example, we were going to do Shopify for our e-store, and we are going to use Shopify for our e-store. And the reason why is because you can't find a better option. And if you know one, just put it in there in the comments or let me know on Twitter of a better option than Shopify to get you up and running in 30 minutes, which again, we were up and running and able to start taking transactions in less than like an hour. And yeah, you had to do some other configuration stuff because of taxes. But the point is that you had a standing e-store like in an hour, and it's only like $30 a month. That's a pretty good deal for a guy who's got a full-time job and just wants to sell pens and ramble on YouTube. People said you should go to Bongino's thing, and that was a great idea. I went and looked at it. Barrier to entry was not something that we had, and it looked like you needed to have inventory, you already needed to have sales numbers, you need to have all this stuff. Now, maybe that's not the case, but when you start filling out the form and they start asking you how much money are you selling, how much are you actually turning in profit, and you're like, zero, it seems like the process just kind of stops. So that's not a dig at Bongino, it's just trying to say that you have this you have these challenges as a conservative content creator, or in this case, we really should just call it small businesses, that are trying to get started, want to share their ideas. You know, they have no idea how successful they're going to be, but they don't have a $50 million budget, which is what the Daily Wire, by the way, offered Steven Crowder. So, I mean, like, these are numbers that, you know, people can only hope to have. But at the end of the day, my point is that some people said, you're going to use Shopify? And it was like, well, yeah, I don't have an option. And there were conversations where it was like, well, you really should try something else. There's people, you know, we've talked about, you know, we have a little kind of advisory group that I use to kind of bounce ideas off. I know that a lot of you guys are actually the ones watching right now, which, you know, way to go, VIP. The reality is that I ask them questions all the time. I say, you know, should I use Google Analytics on my site? I don't know if I should. There's business reasons to consider it, GDPR, international privacy laws, things like that, that you have to consider. And I probably have to consider anyway on our website. You also have different things about, well, Google is, you know, the man, and, you know, they're after free speech, and you have a bunch of people getting upset about that. So there's a lot to consider in this whole thing. And I can tell you right now, we sunk way more money into this little project than I thought we were going to start before we ever turned a dime. So, you know, it is just expensive if you want to actually have the setup you need to have. So here's the thing in all this, especially because, you know, I'm a Christian and, most, and these guys are all Judeo-Christian, hashtag Ben Shapiro. You know, got to get that Jewish aspect in there. But the bottom line is that they all hold to this idea that, you know, you should be respectful to each other. You should be kind to each other. Jeremy Boring is a Christian, and he is definitely, you know, as we go through some of these clips, I think the one who has actually done the best in his response. Now, again, I'm going to play that first so that, because I think that's the important piece. So just real quick, I'm going to pull this up, and we are still live, I believe. I'm going to make this a big screen there. And this is on YouTube, so this isn't behind the paywall or anything. You guys can go watch it. And I just got to change my scene here. Thank you for your patience, by the way. And let's see if that will run that scene. There we go. Look at that. Seamless. All right. And then I just got to remember that what I see you guys seeing is not the same thing. So let me know in the comments if you can't hear this so that I can adjust the volume.
I'll put our...
Okay, there we go. So this is the end of Jeremy Boring's video, just a little context. And he has gone through the contract in full at this, and it's not a contract, it's a term sheet, which is just an initial discussion point. It's to get the conversation started, okay? And I'll talk about more of what was in there and why I think, like Andrew Clavin's point, I just don't think Daily Wire should have even considered Lateral's Crowder. And I don't know if he was... if Clavin was actually meaning to mean that, but that's my position. I just don't think that their brands go together. But listen to Jeremy Boring's response. Keep in mind that this is before Crowder's response to Jeremy Boring. And, you know, I just think it's a real classy thing. So in the back of your mind, think of this, like the verse, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Or how about, if you don't have love, you're nothing but a clanging cymbal. These kinds of passages, and I just think Jeremy Boring does a great job dealing with this, and I'm proud to say I'm a Daily Wire subscriber, and I think you guys should too. So listen to Jeremy's response at the end of this whole situation.
Hard work, determination, and success rate up against anybody. And I'll put our audience and our fans and our Daily Wire Plus members up against anybody, any day. We are moving the ball forward. And it's unfortunate that Stephen said otherwise. So what should you do? Should you run over and cancel your Mug Club subscription? Should you go attack Stephen in the comments? Should you? No, none of that. In fact, if you're not a subscriber to Mug Club, you should head over to mugclubforever.com right now and subscribe. Stephen's one of the most important voices and most talented voices in the movement today. We need him to succeed. We need him to be big. We need his, whatever he does next, to be huge. You just need to know that he was wrong about this.
So it's pretty good. I mean, you had a close friend attack you by releasing a confidential document, and everybody knew that it was Daily Wire. I mean, that's the reality. And some of us kind of assumed that some of the things that were in this term sheet were not exactly what we would say is fighting the fight. Now, again, that doesn't mean that they're wrong or anything like that. But the problem from just to kind of take Crowder's position for a moment. Again, remember, I'm Team Jeremy on some of this stuff, is that if you followed these guys as they were developing their brands, they gave the impression that they used the same branding and the same language and the same kind of rhetoric, but they had different business models. And so Crowder had this piss off segment on YouTube. And he would go through and he would take his content that he knew could get banned. He'd put it over there. And Daily Wire basically says, we thought that was a great idea, so we decided to do the same thing. And all of us thought, hey, look at that. They're doing the same thing Mug Club's doing. And there was even some back and forth a couple of years ago about who had the better vessel. And this is why on the backstage, you used to see, I don't think you'll see it anymore, but you used to see Louder with Crowder mugs on their backstage where they would, you know, as a joke, you know, we're dunking our cigars into the Louder Crowder mug. Now, the thing is that they gave the impression, and Jeremy Boring and many other people have said multiple times, that the subscriptions are what keep their business alive and that that's the reason why they can do Gina Carano's stuff. That's the reason why they can offer people like Steven Crowder $50 million, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But then in this video, earlier on, you find out that if somebody gets demonetized, they get a 25% reduction of their fee. It's basically their salary, but it's a fee because they're on a contract. So this, what were we gonna say?
Have you switched your scene?
No, I haven't switched scenes yet. I'm fine. So anyway, at the end of the day, you know, this whole situation. Well, I guess I can switch my scene. There we go. Look at this. We're just doing this on the fly, guys. We're redneck intellectuals over here. There we go. Now you can see my whole beautiful face and any blemishes that I may have missed in makeup. Anyway, so at the end of the day, the problem with this whole thing, and I'm coming in loud, it looks like, on my setting. So if I'm coming in too loud, just let me know, everybody. At the end of the day, that was a shock for people because they kept saying that the subscriptions were the primary means by which Daily Wire did most of their business, which when you see that the if your video on YouTube or Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any of these leftist big tech companies gave you a demonetization or a strike or a ban, that you would incur these pretty substantial fees, like in percentages, like 25%, et cetera, et cetera. And Jeremy Boring goes through all the business side of things. I'm not going to hash out whether or not that's fair or whatever. That was what Crowder should have done behind closed doors, but he didn't. But the thing that shocked a lot of Daily Wire people was that this is actually how business operates. And I can, on a very, very small level, relate, because you've got, when you have friends say, wow, man, you're using Shopify? Like, isn't there anything else? No, there's not. Well, there's got to be. Can't you build your own? No, I can't. You know, I don't have a choice. If I want to sell stuff as a small business for a low cost, I just don't have a choice. And this is why it sucks. But Daily Wire, the problem was that they used the same rhetoric that Crowder used. And Crowder was legally fighting battles against YouTube, legally fighting all of these things. I have no idea if Daily Wire actually helped them out. Helped out the Crowder team when they went and sued Big Tech. I know that the Daily Wire team actually talked about how they went to bat for Crowder with YouTube and their leadership and all this kind of stuff. I mean, they really did help him out. But that's because they have a different business model. The shocking thing is that when you look at the YouTube percentages that they were going to strike Crowder with, had he actually agreed with that term sheet and it went to contract, they were pretty substantial. And anyone who's been following Crowder for a while would know that that would be a suicide run for him, because he doesn't have any monetization on YouTube if what he says on YouTube is true. Now, again, we don't know any of his financials or anything like that. It's very possible that he could be operating in the same exact way as Daily Wire says. But everybody knows that Daily Wire is much more, as Clavin said, I think, and we'll watch the video, is more decorous. And I don't know what that word means, but I'm just going to assume that what it means is that they're just a little bit more classy, a little bit not so much so edgy. But the point is that was a shocker for a lot of the Daily Wire fans, because here we are in our jobs, you know, taking our stands, avoiding pronouns, and not with $50 million salaries, not with these huge, huge sums of money that we could lose or not. We're just trying to put food on the table. And to know that Daily Wire does have contracts connected with YouTube is just kind of a morale blow. Not because they're immoral, but because that means that the state of big tech is so bad that you cannot have a Daily Wire without these kinds of compromises. And that means that somebody like Crowder has to go and figure out a different business model, because he's the principled business model. He's not the strategic business model. And that's an important difference to understand as you decide which side you're on in this whole debate, because neither model is guaranteed to win, because you're in an actual war. It's not a hot war, but it's a war for the freedoms in your country and the freedom of the internet and the freedom of all these things that we all grew up saying are very important. And Jeremy Boring and the Daily Wire team has a different approach to win that battle than Steven Crowder. And Steven Crowder basically thinks that Daily Wire has sold out. And a lot of his fans do as well. I've been engaging with some of them on Twitter. I really appreciate that, by the way, if you're watching this. But now, given that Jeremy Boring, literally after he's been attacked, says, we need Steven Crowder in this movement. I'm not happy with what he did, but we need him. That's a pretty good response. Now, here's what Steven Crowder did to Jeremy Boring in his response. So I'm going to switch this scene here. I'm working on it. Just give me a minute. Here we go. Now, keep in mind, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. And Like, that's a pretty nice response from Jeremy Boring. And what did he do? He decides that he's going to play a recording from his friend, Jeremy Boring, and on the live air. And for those that can't hear it, he says wage slaves in this clip. Jeremy Boring does. Like, look at his face.
They don't get deals that...
They can be wage slaves for a little bit, come over and make a salary and grow their brand. They can be wage slaves for a little bit. They can be wage slaves for a little bit.
God bless the talk boy. Those things are worth like $5,000 now. It's an expensive gag.
That's pretty low. So what this video is, and I'm not going to play it in its entirety, he went and recorded his friend, which is not the same thing that Project Veritas does, by the way. Okay, they record people who are not their friends, and they make them believe that they're friends. Like, they're not really friends. They're undercover journalists. Crowder went in and took advantage of a friendship of a person with extreme wealth, power, and popularity, and took advantage of his friendship in order to throw him under the bus, which is pretty bad. I mean, if you just think about this, I honestly don't know what he's thinking here. And I'm saying this as somebody who subscribed to both at one point. I don't think I'm going to subscribe, honestly, at this point to Louder with Crowder because of this part. If he really wanted to actually have said, you know what, we're just going to do a different business model, but now you all know. That would have been a lot smarter move. But at the end of the day, he shot himself in the foot on this little movement. And I don't know what else he says here. Let's just see what else he says.
So, didn't want to have to do this, but Daily Wire outed themselves very, very quickly. And sure enough, if you see all of the people who work there, some of whom I have relationships with, they immediately tried to make this all about money.
Okay. So, that is actually important. So, what he's going to do is he's going to say that it wasn't about the money. And that's fair, because if you're a principled person, if you're anyone who has taken a stance in your job or has left a job because you felt like things were getting too political, too, whether you're on the left or the right, you just don't have the free, you're not making the same level of decisions here in your normal job. You're taking a principled stand. And some of you may have actually taken some significant price hits. I know that I have. And at the end of the day, those kinds of principal decisions do have a slightly larger impact on us normies here than you know, somebody with a $50 million value and probably even higher. I mean, Jeremy Boring says in his video he would have gone higher. My wife is telling me to switch scenes, but she wanted to do it stealthily. And so she sent a text message to me. There you go. So you want to say something?
Listen, you got to get am I coming through?
Oh, yeah, you're coming through loud and clear. Yep.
I was just going to say, you got to be, you know, coy about this.
Right now, we're at a small group level. Everybody, please put your prayer requests in the comments section. I'm just kidding. But anyway, so at the end of the day, you know, this is a big problem. This is a bad look for Louder with Crowder. This is a bad approach to doing his new business model. And again, it probably will pay off. I mean, he's got some people who just don't like the Daily Wire, because let's be honest. I mean, if you're kind of more of like a salt of the earth kind of person, the Daily Wire does come off a little bit Ivy League, prudy kind of group of people. It's just the reality. If you're more in the elite aspects of the life where you kind of judge people who, oh, you don't understand politics and, you know, McCarthy, you know, he's just trying to play the game, or, you know, whatever. I mean, like, at the end of the day, some of us are sitting here and saying this at some point, you got to have a line in the sand, which is what Jordan Peterson says. Like, this is the risk that I think Crowder does point out that is accurate, is, okay, so at what point does Daily Wire stop using YouTube as part of their business model for their ads to run on their YouTube channel? Not their reading of ads or any of those kinds of things. As far as I understand it, it wasn't their, you know, do you want some Birch Gold? It's not that kind of stuff that they were saying was going to be the hit. What was going to be the hit was the fact that when you go onto YouTube and an ad is supposed to run before you play the clip, it wasn't going to play anymore. That's what it means to be demonetized. Steven Crowder has way more subscribers than Ben Shapiro or any other person at the Daily Wire, and he hasn't had the infrastructure that the Daily Wire has. That's why they're saying he's so valuable. But the problem is at what point does Daily Wire say it's too far? We need to figure out a different way of doing this, because one thing's for sure, the people who are really happy about what's going on right now is YouTube and the big tech. They're happy that they have these terms in their Daily Wire contracts. They know that they can hurt conservatives now, and this is louder with Crowder's point, that they can hurt conservative hosts by virtue of the fact that the hosts have built their business model entirely on YouTube. And the question is how much has Steven Crowder done the same thing? Is he a hypocrite, or does he literally have zero monetization on his YouTube channel? If he comes out and he shows, I have zero monetization, for them to actually even put this kind of contract forward was just unthoughtful, especially for people who know how much I've been fighting this fight in a different way and not in the kind of decorous way that Klavan says. All that being said, recording your friend and then putting it all out online and putting his business at risk, not cool. And then later in this video, he says, call me. We can have a chat. Yeah, he's not going to call you now, dude. You got a talk boy right there on your desk. And the way you're even approaching this is just a level of unstableness that doesn't seem like it warrants like somebody where we could like where somebody could call you and trust you. That's a problem. Anyway, Crowder doesn't care who I am. He's worth $50 million. I'm worth like 10 bucks. So, well, I'm priceless, actually. But that's a topic for another conversation. Now, my wife was only worth about $3,000. I'm just kidding. Oh, man, too easy. It's too easy. All right, where are we at here? Hold on, let me check my notes. Hang in there. Okay, so yeah, so the next thing is we're just going to talk about Andrew Klavan's. And I think he has... The other hosts, they made their comments and stuff, but Andrew Klavan's the best one. And I think it's because he's old, bald, and wise. And so at the end of the day, he makes a really good point here where he says that basically everybody needs to just stop talking about it. It needs to go. They need to go their separate ways. Crowder needs to start his business. I was talking with a friend of mine before the show. I'm glad he mentioned to actually listen to this, because it was literally this morning he told me. So you know who you are if you're watching. I listened to this. It's very good. Everybody should listen to Andrew Klavan's response to Crowder and Jeremy Borian's and Ben Shapiro's. Everybody else's was kind of trash, to be honest, in my opinion. Candace Owens is just the female version of Crowder. She decided to just throw fire onto an already raging dumpster fire. It didn't help anything. She called him a B. It was just not great. And Candace has her own style of doing things. I mean, all these guys are hosts and stuff. And what we have to remember as the viewers is like, look, like these people are not our friends. When they do something we don't like, don't take it personal. It's just otherwise you're going to find yourself in a pit of despair. Oh, we got a viewer in the house, mama, right there. At the end of the day, this is what Klavan is going to say. So let me pull this one up. And again, this should be on YouTube. And I'm just going to change my scene here. And there we go.
His own media game, right? He's a very, very clever, brilliant guy at figuring out how to beat the left at its own game. And sometimes that means zigging, sometimes that...
He's talking about Jeremy Boring, by the way, right here. That's who he's saying. It's like he's zigging and zagging. He's trying to talk about why you have to make compromises in order to have an effect.
It means kind of not doing it directly, kind of going around all this talk about warriors and this is a war and all this stuff. You've got to play with strategy to win a war. And we have come a long, long way with Jeremy guiding the ship. So that's the way he's doing what he does. Steven Crowder, God bless him, throws himself at the wall. He just throws himself at the wall, and he does hilarious stuff, and he does different stuff. And we need both those things. We need both those things on the right to beat the left. We need all kinds of things. And I'm glad to see that it's all happening, and I'm really sorry. And I'm not saying anything to you I wouldn't say to Stephen in person, and haven't just said to Stephen in person. I think he did the wrong thing. If he doesn't like Jeremy's business model, let him build his own business and compete with Jeremy, and then Jeremy will have to change, and then he'll have to adapt. If that's what he thinks the right thing to do is, and he thinks it's possible to do it another way, and I'm sure there are other ways to do it, let Crowder do that, And then I have to just address one more thing, because this happened after I...
Before he goes on, I want to comment on that too. So that's basically my point there, is that Crowder should have just kept his mouth shut, gone, if he really has the balls to go out there and make all these kinds of claims that they're doing their business wrong. I mean, Daily Wire has 200-something employees. Crowder has 30. So, you know, I mean, just not saying he doesn't know how to run a business, but just let the money speak for itself. You know, close friend of mine, he says, follow the money and figure, you know, that's a great way to find corruption. It's a great way. But in this kind of situation, we have to understand what's going on. And it makes me remember this when we did our Live Not By Lies study, that that at the end of the day, there was a guy in the Live Not By Lies book who was in a communist country and he just couldn't handle it anymore. He knew communism was evil. He just thought it was so dumb. And he went and he grabbed this poster and he ripped it off the ground. It was like Stalin's face or something like that. Or maybe it was in Romania. I can't remember which one. But anyway, it was the communist jerkwad who was there. And he rips it off and he decides to stomp on it and spit on the paper. Well, of course, the guards grabbed him, take him, and decide to make an example of him and just like shock therapy the sorry, I want to swear because it's just bad. Anyway, the bottom line is that they just shock him to death, basically. He doesn't die, but he becomes basically brain dead and he's mentally handicapped. They just destroyed him. And Dreyer talked about this, I believe, with like his daughter or his granddaughter or something like that. And what the point was, the lesson was like, don't let them break you. Don't let them make you do something foolish where they can say, gotcha. You know, it's kind of like the guy who keeps like poking you and poking you and poking you and poking you, and then you punch him, and that's exactly what he wanted, because now he can use the principle to get you in really big trouble. And now communism is a little bit different, because it's the principal who's doing the poking, right? And then they're like, ha, gotcha, now we can kill you, right? It's a problem. But the point is that this essentially is what I think happened with Crowder, is that this big tech stuff, and it is a big problem. Like, it goes way further than I think that the Daily Wire may or may not understand. But as someone who's a developer, if you're in the tech industry, it's way worse than anybody who just watches shows on YouTube would even begin to understand. It's such a huge problem. And so when you talk about the idea that you should just do your own business model, and instead you decided that you were going to go and just throw all your friends under the bus, I think that's big tech actually getting inside Crowder's head and getting him to do exactly what they wanted him to do. They wanted him to, not in a conspiratorial way. I don't think YouTube's over there like, what we must do is get the Crowder and we must get him to turn on his friends. No, I don't think that's what was going on. I'm just saying the zeitgeist, so to speak, the aura of our cultural battle, so to speak, just got to him in the same way that it does when people are in actual war. And the mortar fire and shelling and all this kind of stuff just keeps breaking you down and breaking you down and breaking you down. And you jump out of the trench and you decide to run for it, and then you get picked off. Like, that's what happened to Crowder, in my opinion. So Clavin's going to keep going here, and then we'll wrap up the Crowder segment.
Talked to Stephen. He recorded a conversation with Jeremy. I'm going to put this as kindly as I can out of my love for Stephen. That's a moral error, okay? That's you have to have lost touch with something to do that. That is a moral error. And I'm sorry he did it. And I wish he would think that over again. Think about that some more. Now, I've listened to what some of the other guys are saying. I think Matt Walsh made some really good comments on Twitter. I didn't go on Twitter because I was annoyed with all the fake name guys. But I saw what Candace did. I got to admit, it made me laugh out loud. I mean, God, it was so Candace. She just ripped Crowder to pieces. And I love her to death. And I thought that was, it made me laugh because it was just Candace all over. But that's not where I think this should go. I think it's got to stop. And I hope I'm not in control of all these people. And I know Jeremy won't tell them what to do, but I hope that we leave it alone from here on.
Yeah, that's the answer right there. Leave it alone. let the guy go and just keep screaming at the rooftops. And if he's successful, then great. But at the end of the day, this whole situation here is a lot more complex than anybody wants to know on the ground. And here's the hard thing is that, family. This is the hard thing is that at the end of the day, the issue is, sorry, I got a text message coming through. This is the hard thing is that with this, whole attitude that everybody's having, they're only making things worse. These other YouTube people, because at the end of the day, the people who should be responding are Klavan, Shapiro, and Boring. The other ones were not a part of Daily Wire's original rise in the same way. Like the Daily Wire team, meaning Shapiro, Klavan, and Boring, go back with Crowder before Knowles and all those guys ever had their shows, as far as me, a viewer, is concerned. And so at the end of the day, they all need to just let their executives deal with this, because this isn't business anymore. This is a betrayal of friendship, and we don't have it here, but you should watch Ben Shapiro's play by play. And again, I'm discouraged too about the fact that they've got all this big tech monetization stuff in their contracts. And the people who aren't really upset about that are the people that, generally speaking, are willing to make compromises more soon than maybe they should. Just leaving it there. I mean, again, we're in a culture war. People are going to have to make the judgments that they need to make. Daily Wire is at some point going to have to ask themselves, well, where is that line in the sand when you can't just sue the government and get out of it? When you have to take the principled stand and you do have to lose, because losing is actually the right answer in that situation. I don't know where that line is. If this ever becomes successful and I get to make those decisions, well, we'll find out. But at the end of the day, this is just a mess. They need to stop talking about it. They need to let it go. It's a bummer that Daily Wire has the business model that they have. From me personally, that's how I feel. But again, that's because this actually communicates we're in a lot worse problem. We're actually in what I would say this proves is that we are actually in a fascistic kind of relationship with big tech and our lives. Like they are working hand in hand, and we've got to be smart and wise. Wise as serpents, gentle as doves. If that's what Jesus said to do, who's actually the one between Daily Wire and Louder with Crowder who's doing that? Who's actually the one who is gentle like a dove but wise as a serpent? Hands down, Jeremy Boring. Props to you. You know, at the end of the day, if you give me $1 million, I might consider a contract. Just saying. But anyway, at the end of the day, this is just a real bummer, and it's a real wound to the conservative movement. And even though Crowder's doing what he's doing, Klavan and Boring both said, look, we actually need him in the movement because he's willing to do stuff that the Daily Wire is not willing to do. And at the end of the day, the thing that Daily Wire probably made as a mistake was that they should have known that their brands were incompatible, and they should have never offered Crowder a contract to begin with, or a term sheet to begin with, because everybody knew that they had a different approach to fighting this thing. Crowder is the idealistic. He's the platonic version of fighting this fight. And Daily Wire is the more realist kind of, we've got to make a judgment. Maybe if you want to use the Jesuit model, I don't know. That's kind of I don't know enough about the Jesuits to make fun of them, but they'd like to equivocate. And the Crowder team or the Crowder fans seem to think that Daily Wire is just being hypocritical. I don't think that's what it is. I think they're trying to fight a fight, and they know that they're down, and they know that they're going to take a long time, and they're trying to play the long game. And only time will tell who's actually the right business model. But we, as the viewers, can't judge them yet, because neither one of them has actually proven that they can, that their model will win. On that note, as I was saying with one of my other friends at lunch earlier this week, that the reality is that big tech knows exactly how far they want Daily Wire to go. They do. While Daily Wire is changing Nashville or Tennessee, big tech is having an influence on California, Texas, Indiana. I mean, New York. I mean, they do have a much larger momentum coming through on these issues. And what people need to understand, and I understand from a developer standpoint, and anyone in IT who does data analytics understands, is that the amount of data we have on human behavior is more dense, more quantitative, and of higher quality, and with greater tools, as we'll see with ChatGPT, to analyze and do predictive analytics than we've ever had in human history. So Daily Wire is only going as far as the tech companies want them to go, which I don't think is unfair to say, but that's why I think Daily Wire has to say internally, I don't need to put this out there for everybody to see, that'd be a bad strategy. But hopefully they have a line in the sand where they say, hey guys, this is when we're going down with the ship. This is when we say, well, we did our best, but in good faith, in good conscience, we stand before God. We're not going to actually be able to go any further. Steven Crowder has made his line public, and he's judging everybody for not having the same line, which is not the right approach. So moving on, we're going to go into ChatGPT. So for those of you who do not know what ChatGPT actually is, it is the Google killer. Yes, the Google killer. Now, some stats here. Like, it's already at over 5 million users on ChatGPT. It is a artificial intelligence search engine that is going to change virtually every aspect of the industry as more and more tools like it come onto the market. Within a week, it got... yes, Daryl, I see that. Yep, I'm with Clavin on this. Boom, same.
Do you also see that you are priceless?
Yes, I see that. I do see that, Andrew. I appreciate that. I don't know who you are, but, you know, I appreciate that. One thing's for sure, you're worthless. I'm just kidding. Anyway, so what we're talking about here on ChatGPT. So ChatGPT is this artificial intelligence that just came out, and it's a social media app, and you sign up for an account. I haven't done one yet. We're going to do a show on it later, in depth. But essentially, and I've got a video here of some of the things it can do for technologists like myself. I'm a developer, for those that don't know. And so at the end of the day, it's a very powerful tool. It's going to take away a ton of your need to search the internet. Like, you know, you go on Google and you say, I want to learn about finance, or I want to learn about this or whatever, and you get a billion hits. Well, ChatGPT basically aggregates the best response. I know that sounds crazy. And then gives it to you. Yes, there's a bias problem. No, you can't ask it to give you a pro-life defense. No, you can't ask it to give you a transgender kind of thing. But the thing is, we're an argument against transgenderism. But you can contextualize your questions. So one of the experiments I want to do for one of our episodes is ask it to start writing sermons on theology and see what'll happen. But I'm going to show you real quick, just from a technical side of things, how this actually works. And then we'll wrap up here on some more administrative things. So let me get over here and pull this up. Okay, so this is a video on YouTube. It's by this. I'll show you the. I'm just on YouTube too. I'm not doing nothing fancy. You guys, are they seeing that? Yeah. Okay, they got it. So this is programming with Mosh, and I use some of his stuff for my day job, And I think I used one of his videos. Anyway, he's got 3.5 million subscribers. He's pretty legit. And I always recommend people to, even if you're not a technologist, subscribe to at least some tech channels, because they do give you information about what's really going on in terms of the way technology is influencing you. They're not really biased, because they're just telling you what the tech can do. Like, I have no idea what this guy's political views are. He's just demoing the tech. So we're going to watch what this does, and what he's about to do is he's going to show you how he can ask the AI to just write code for him that will work.
Okay, write a Python function for generating a random password. So as you can see, we get a piece of code beautifully highlighted with explanation of how it works. Now, if there is a part of this code that you don't understand, you can always ask follow-up questions. For example, we can ask what this expression does in this code. So
before he goes on, so the reason why this is impressive is because this is a very standard developer process. That if somebody said, hey, you know, we need password protection on this app. Okay, well, I would have to write the code to get the password to give the person, and then they would have to be able to use it. It just wrote the code for you, just right there. It even gave, you know, the comments. It even commented the code in a way that a developer would never do. And I know, because developers don't put comments in their code, and it sucks. Shame on you all. Shame. Shouldn't even have your certifications. Just kidding. Obviously, I'm self-taught, and I took everything hook, line, and sinker. The real developers don't need to. They just read it like a book. Anyway, so the bottom line is they put this thing in there, and you can do even more stuff. I mean, if you're a developer out there, you can get this thing to, you can copy your code in there, and you can just have it write unit tests for it, meaning code that will actually test the code you wrote. Just nuts. And for non-techies out there, unit tests are oftentimes the most, what's the word? They're not laborious, but they're the most just mundane aspect of your job. You're not creating anything. You're literally just going through and you're writing everything out multiple times repetitively, and it sucks. And oftentimes your boss doesn't understand why it's preventing you from getting it into production, unless you have a developer for a boss. So now he's going to show you that you can actually contextualize your questions, and this will all make sense on how it relates to religion and philosophy and theology in a minute.
Oh, we can ask, what does 4 in I range of length do in this code? Take a look. Really, really useful. Couldn't be better.
So what he just did was he said, simulated basically saying, I don't understand what that code does. And he just asked ChatGPT to explain it, and it did. Like, now maybe you don't understand it, but you don't have to do this with just code. You can do this on anything. I talked to a developer, a friend of mine. He actually asked it to write code for him for his job, and he used it, and it worked. And this guy is only a year into development. So this is a big deal, okay? Now, you might ask yourself, well, how does this relate to, you know, the intellectual life? And yeah, I'm getting to it, man. You nag me in public like you do in private. I'm just kidding. But the, I can't move that over there. We're going to have to work on that scenes. But anyway, so how does this relate to theology, philosophy, all that kind of stuff? A lot of people will be like, this is great. I'll be able to write ad copy. For example, this is one of the aspects of a friend of mine apparently told me that CNET, which is a technological blog, now just uses AI to write its blog articles about technology. And they tested it and nobody noticed. And so they just use AI to write those articles now. Now, this is not hard to imagine how this could impact, say, sermons from pastors at your church. There's already a plagiarism problem just in society. Students are copying people's papers. They find them online. They submit them as their own. Pastors, I've talked to friends of mine who have had pastors who have gotten fired because they found out that the entire year of his sermons were pulled from somebody like R.C. Sproul or something like that. Well, here's the problem. And maybe you don't think it's a problem. Let me know in the comments. But what happens when a Southern Baptist preacher or a Methodist preacher or an Anglican preacher, instead of going through the process that he was hired to do, which is write a sermon, decides that he's going to write a sermon with ChatGPT. You, the parishioner or the congregant, has no idea that he used AI to do this. Is that morally acceptable for the pastor to do those things? To outsource his intellect to an artificial intelligence? Now, again, some people say, but it's going to be wrong. Well, for now. But if you can contextualize it, and this is one of the things I want to experiment, and I'll let you know. If it ends up actually working, then I'll end up, I got to turn on Do Not Disturb next time, Lindsay. I'm getting messages from my phone on my computer. But the reason why this matters, some of you might say, well, it doesn't matter because, you know, it's going to be wrong. It's biased. I mean, I saw that Ben Shapiro show. He's not going to, I mean, it can't even give you an argument for pro-life. Okay, yeah, maybe, until you contextualize it and say, hey, what does the Catholic Catechism say on the Incarnation? Well, it should just give you what it has. And then you say, write me a sermon based on the Catechism's definitions of the Incarnation. In theory, it will do that. Now, I'm going to test it and let you know what happens. I'm just going to get to it for this episode. But if that actually works, you will see a problem in churches all over the world of people not qualified to be pastors actually faking the ability to be one. Because it's not about whether or not you can just orate a sermon. It's about whether or not this information is part of who you are. And so it's not the same thing as a calculator. Some people might make the argument of a calculator. Well, look, like, you know, I'm an accountant. I don't use math. I use a calculator every single day. And what, you expect me to just do basic arithmetic in my head? Well, no, because that's quantitative reasoning. That's number crunching. That's not moral or abstract or theological reasoning that is supposed to change you as you learn. That's part of the whole point of the intellectual life right here. Is that it changes you. When you actually, and this is the Thomist perspective, when you have knowledge of something, and probably Aristotelian too, it's not enough that you just state it. That's not an indication that you have knowledge, and I can prove that because if somebody decides to write a sermon with ChatGPT and then put it out there as if it's their knowledge, anyone who goes up to them and asks them to actually synthesize what was in the sermon, they won't be able to because it's not part of them. And this isn't uncommon when, if you read, there's a book called The Anglican Spiritual Tradition by a guy named Mormon. And if you read that, he talks about the fact that one of the problems they had in the Church of England was the fact that you, during this whole back and forth, I think it was before they even broke off from Rome, the Catholics that would become Anglicans, and I can't remember if this was before or after, it doesn't really matter, the authority structure was basically the same locally, the bishops would not allow priests to actually preach the sermons that they had. They would sit there and they would write the sermons, and then the bishops would distribute the sermon to all the parishes to make sure that the priest stayed Orthodox. Some of the priests weren't allowed to even preach their own sermons. So the problem is that, number one, you can make an argument, well, great, ChatGPT makes that problem really easy. We don't need to do that. Well, maybe, but it's not ideal for a priest to not know his theology, or a pastor to not know his theology. It's not enough to just regurgitate it and then just put it out there. So the question is, well, who's actually going to have a defense of this? Let's just say that nobody listens to Daniel Roberts on this whole subject and they just decide, yeah, let's use ChatGPT for the sermons. I would say that the only denominations that actually can guard against this are the liturgical denominations that have liturgy as a part of their church service, because it requires not knowledge, but a human being in order to actually do the ceremony. Now, somebody might say, well, what if Elon Musk makes a robot priest? We don't have to feed him. We don't have to do that. That's the same thing. He's going through the motions. Yes, he's going through the motions. The form is the same, but the substance is not. Christ did not have an AI essence, an artificial intelligence. And so liturgical traditions that are trying to be authentic would not be able to just replace a human being with an AI. Now, you say that this is absurd. You say that that's crazy, all this kind of stuff. Well, all the people that are in power right now would love to sell churches robots. They would do it in a heartbeat. And I know that sounds crazy. I'm not trying to be a conspiracy theorist. I'm just doing a thought experiment. If people are willing to outsource their intellects to artificial intelligence, there's no reason why a parish that is struggling financially and doesn't have good theology anyway wouldn't fundraise to get an AI that would be able to preach Orthodox sermons anyway. And you say, well, those big tech people wouldn't want to do that anyway. Yeah, they would. They'd make a ton of money. So at the end of the day, this is a problem for Christians to at least think through about the theological implications of using tools like this in order to spiritually feed yourself, right? Maybe you're doing a Bible study. You want to use ChatGPT in order to do it. Oh, maybe. But don't you lose something by not going through the pain of learning? That is how things are codified in you as knowledge. But it's not merely that we're going for rote memorization or just like being able to pretend like we have knowledge. That's what ChatGPT does. And as technology continues to grow, people, Christians specifically, religious people, are starting to allow technology to inform their theological convictions. And this is no different. You could say that on abortion. You talk to a Protestant, talk to a Catholic, they'll both say, I'm against abortion. Well, maybe. And the stats show that both of them basically kind of are right there. But then ask them, what is an abortion? Well, they're going to have two different views. And one is based on the view of a human being starting at conception. The other one is, well, it might be a baby at conception, but really implantation is where it starts. Now, I know plenty of Protestants that would not, evangelicals that would not hold to that. But I've also talked with some Catholic friends who have gone and actually worked at pregnancy care centers where they all had IUDs or they all had abortifacient type birth control because they all thought that it began at implantation, not at conception. So this makes a difference when you're reading these surveys. Well, what do they mean by abortion? Because a Catholic means something very different than a Protestant in a lot of these situations. All that being said, the reason why they have a difference in their opinion on abortion is because technology is influencing them. That's why. It's because, as C.S. Lewis says in Abolition of Man, contraception, the airways or airplanes, and the wireless are making us become detached from what it means to be human. C.S. Lewis isn't trying to tell you in that book, well, you know, we just need more emotion. We just need to get more in touch with our emotion, men without chests. That's not what he's talking about. What he's talking about is men are losing the essence of what it means to be human because technology and government are coming in and on the first chapter, influencing education, and on the second chapter, technology is coming in and making men feel like they're gods. And it's no coincidence that Yuval Noah Harari, a contemporary of our own time, wrote a book called Homo Deus, Man God, where he says, right at the beginning, chapter one, in vitro fertilization, we can play God. So at the end of the day, technology is having an influence on theology, and you have to make sure that you have a tradition to back you up because all of these things are not necessarily found in the Bible. You have to have some sort of philosophy or theology or tradition outside of the Bible that can show why these things are immoral. All right, so the last thing that we're going to talk about, we need to get those cool transitions like everybody else has, you know, where it's like, Solomon's Corner. Transition to next topic.
Yeah, then we need one of those sounds.
Yes. Whoosh. So the last thing we're going to talk about is what we're reading. We're going to start going through the intellectual life. I'm going to start pulling segments from this throughout the year. So if you want to make sure you can follow along, make sure you pick one up. Make sure you pick one up from us, though, through our e-store when it launches and get an intellectual life bundle so we can keep bringing you content. That'll, again, come with a kind of moleskinish kind of thing and then a pen. And so be on the lookout for when. And if you can't, I don't know if you can see, how well can you see these pens? Let's see how well you can see that. Yeah, that's a beauty right there. I don't know if you can see that, but that's pretty good. That's not bad. We'll bring it back. Ooh. Anyway, it's a nice little fountain pen. This is just one that I made. We've got a whole bunch on the store. Boom. So anyway, make sure you sign up for that. The book that we are currently reading for novels, we're going to try and do more novels this year, is The Woman Who Was Poor. That's going to be our book for February, because January is already almost over, but we started this. We're going to start trying to crank through a lot more books. And instead of doing like episode after episode after episode, we're going to try and do books like this. Now, if you don't like that, even if you're not on live stream, just let us know if you want to have more of the book club episodes where we do that. If you found those helpful or beneficial, I'm more than willing to jump on a live stream real quick informally and just kind of go through the book and talk about it and get you guys in the live stream and we can just talk about books. It takes a lot of work to put those things together. So we just need to know that it's worth it. And that's something you guys would like, but this is a book that influenced Maritain, into his Christianity for the Protestants out there who care, or Catholics who care. He was a Catholic, Leon Blois is, and, he became, Jacques Maritain's, who's a natural law, philosopher who just really, really had a huge influence on the global stage, after World War II. He Maritan, that is, was someone who was an agnostic who almost killed himself, his wife with him, Raisa. They ended up becoming Christians, and Leon Bloy was one of the big reasons why they became Christians. And so it's a very, very powerful book. The translator deserves an award, my goodness. So anyway, hopefully we can maybe try and get somebody on to talk about Leon Bloy later this year. If you guys know anybody, let me know, and I'll reach out to them and invite them on the show. Anything else? Let me check here. I don't think so. We are going to, again, moving forward, we're going to have book club, probably have a lower amount of content, but we'll do more summaries of books, big picture ideas. And then you guys can sound off in the comments about what you thought about those books if you're reading along with us. And then Lowering the Digital Footprint, you will find us on Twitter, at Thomistic Dan or at Solomon's Corner. You can follow us there. And then the last thing is we're really hoping to have the e-store up by the end of the year. So make sure that you are subscribed to our newsletter either on solomonscorner.com/bookclub or you are on the e-store. So solomonscorner.com, go to the menu, click store, and then sign up there. That's all we have for today. I appreciate you guys tuning in. And if you can let me know if this time works for you, 3 o'clock works for us. So it might not even matter if that works for you. But if you guys like this time slot and we can do a live stream once a week here, I think that I had a lot of fun doing this. And so I think that this might be something we do on the regular, and actually, instead of just putting it unlisted, actually make it public. But I really appreciate all of you taking time out of your Saturday to come and sit here and listen to me rant about the controversies of the day. If you didn't like anything or you had your own thoughts, make sure you put them in the comments. We don't have a ton of followers, so there's a real good chance that it ends up influencing content at this point. So thanks again. I'm Daniel Roberts, Solomon's Corner. Don't forget, keep thinking. And I got to figure out how to finish this thing. There we go. End broadcast.